Blog Talk Radio.
Who they talking about? They talking about me, Serena Speaks. A hot new show coming to you straight out of Atlanta, Georgia. The king of the South. So you can say, I'm the queen. Bring you nothing but the best and the hottest talent from around the world. I'm your host, Serena, and I'm about to speak. Are you listening? Of course you are.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, how are you? Hi.
I am fabulous. How are you?
I'm awesome. I'm just so honored to have you on my show. So we're already late. So let's just jump right into the interview. Where are you from, sir?
I'm from Los Angeles, California.
Awesome, awesome. So what, you have a very interesting career path. Could you please tell my listeners a little bit about yourself? Like, just anything you would like to tell us right now.
Okay, well, my name is Dr. Chris Hickey. I'm the executive director of Each One, Teach One, Alliance for Academic Access, Achievement, and Success. I grew up in Watts,
awesome.
California, and I have two children.
One of the hardest neighborhoods.
Well, it wasn't hard when I was there. I know it was known for that. I was there actually when the riot started. When you are accustomed to the community, you know, you adapt. So it really wasn't that tough. In fact, I always like to tell people that although I have a PhD, everything I learned, I actually learned growing up in the projects in Watts. So, you know, when you survive that, you know, you're pretty sharp.
You
because
anything.
The people there are sharp. Yeah, you know, the people are sharp. You know, it's just, you know, it's just directed in a different way than it's customary. But it was a good life. It wasn't the standard, but it was okay. I made it.
You made it. What made you pursue a career in education? Was it something you seen growing up?
Well, what actually happened is I was going through school like a lot of us. I didn't have a father, and my mother was as loving mother as she was. She wasn't really getting involved with school things. And so I was a pretty good student, but I didn't have guidance and counseling. And it was a surprise to me. It was a surprise to me, as with many students in inner city. When I was graduating from high school, when I was going to high school, I was going to high school to graduate. Not necessarily to go to college. I thought I was going to college, but I thought the requirements at the time to go to college was just to graduate from high school. And it wasn't until after I graduated from high school, after I graduated and was trying to get into college, that I found out that my college counselor was supposed to be giving me advice on what classes to take. I was in the honors track in high school, and I took myself out because I didn't know that, you know, my friends weren't in it. And so I wanted to be in classes with my friends, and I was a musician. So the last 11th and 12th grade, I took all music classes, and I asked my counselor, was that okay? And she said, yes, I would still graduate, but I did not know those were not the requirements to get into college. So I struggled through college, going to community college first and making up for the things that I should have before I could go to a four-year college. And it took me years to go through college because I had family and so forth, and it was okay. But what happened was when my own children were going through school, I sent them to private school. Now, subsequently, I ended up working at two of the private schools that my kids went to, and I saw the tremendous difference. They went to privileged private schools, you know, very expensive. And I got a chance to see the tremendous difference in what they were getting exposed to and what had happened with me and others when I was in high school. And so that made me want to form Each One Teach One. I wanted to take the things that I learned in the schools that my kids went to, I wanted to take it back to the community in which I grew up and communities like mine and share those kinds of things. And so I went back. My organization does a free SAT prep workshop. And so one of the things that I found that was really significant is that although I was talking to kids about the things they needed to do, a lot of parents were asking me what kinds of things they needed to do. So I started having workshops on the parents' role in creating a college-going culture at home, school, and community. One of the things that I did learn is that although the schools where my kids were going was doing their part, the parents were doing an awful lot also. And so I wanted to share with parents from the community that I grew up in the kinds of things, and you don't have to live in a privileged community. You don't even have to go to a privileged school. If parents do the kinds of things that are done in other communities, the kids will understand and have an appreciation for preparation for college as well as for life. And so I have a tremendous time talking with parents and doing workshops on their role in creating the college-going culture in any community, any household. There's things they can do from the time their kids can talk that will guide their kids into a college track, into a high-end career track, without the kids feeling burdened or feeling that the parents are overbearing or anything. There's fun things that you could do with 3- and 4-year-olds that really put them on the track, appreciate, and to look forward to going to college. So, that is kind of the things that kind of made me do the things that I'm doing with Each One Teach One. And this, like I said, there's other things. I do free SAT prep workshop. And also I'm starting now to do some things with boys and men of color. You know, there's some specific kinds of things that boys and men of color need to be exposed to, particularly those that do not have engaged fathers in their home. So those boys, and this is not just boys and men of color, all boys that don't have engaged fathers in the home, they go through a different kind of thing. And so I've done a lot of study, and in fact, my PhD dissertation was on son father relationship experiences. So I've done a lot of work in that area. So I'm also integrating that kind of work into the things that I do.
You spoke about the parents. Have you found, did you ever teach in public school?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Did you ever teach in public school?
Not as an employee of public schools. I've gone in and done workshops. I've been invited to classes, and I've done workshops at schools on behalf of the district, but I've never been an employee of a public school. I've been employee of private schools, but never an employee of a public school. There's a lot of politics, and I've been offered, but there's a lot of politics in that I found that I could be more effective myself as a contractor.
The reason why I asked, I wanted to know, did you find public school children, parents harder to work with, or do you find that it's easier to work with the parents of private school?
Well, one of the things I'll say that the advantage I have is my own background. If I had the background, and I'm just kind of guessing, if I had the privileged background in the same nature of the schools that I worked in, I probably would have had difficulty working with public school parents. But because I grew up in the environment that I have, I know how to get along with people on both sides of the track. You know, I have, and that's one of the things you learn growing up the way I do. You learn how to, I like to use the term hustle. And so when I'm
that's
in public
right.
schools, I can be in the toughest area, and I can deal with the toughest parents. I know how to deal with them. I know how to talk with them. I know what they're thinking. I know how to get on their good side. I know how to knock them down to them. I know how to get on their level, you know. And I don't. When I say level, I'm not putting a value to it, but I know how to get eye to eye with them. So I don't have a difficult time. In fact, I appreciate working with parents that are more like my natural self than the others. I really appreciate that. So I do not have a hard time. However, I do understand it's a different paradigm. When you're dealing with parents in public schools, particularly from in some communities, it's a whole different thing. The cooperation, you have to get cooperation from them in a different way, but you have to be absolutely comfortable, and you cannot at all be too judgmental of the things that they say and the things that they do. You have to wipe away that and deal with them on where they are. And they come around.
That's right, because you have to understand that they're coming really from a different world than you are in right now. But have you found that your program, we've talked about what led you up to it, but what exactly does your program cater to?
Well, specifically, my program works with, I work with other organizations in the community. I work with other organizations, nonprofit organizations, and help them develop programs that encourage kids to study math, science, and technology. So I help them with their curriculum writing. I come into workshops with parents and students. I help them arrange field trips and things of that nature that encourage kids to study those things and find the fun. And to find their own interest and to find their own talent in those fields. So that was our initial focus. And then it branched off into helping high school students prepare for the SAT. So that's kind of our flagship now, is preparing high school students to take the SAT, which is the gateway to college.
Let me ask you this. Have you found that it's harder to get these kids back on track or to even keep them on track?
It's tough to keep them on track. You know, when kids are little, if you think back, a 2-year-old, a 3- and 4-year-old, mm-hmm. 5-year-old, when you say go to mm-hmm. school, they're excited. Oh, I'm going to go to school.
Yeah.
They can't wait to go to school.
Yeah.
And when you pick them up, they're just so happy. They have their books, and they like reading. And so what happens is they have a natural tendency and a natural desire to learn. And somehow school squeezes that out of them. You know, with the test, sometimes in some schools, with all of the tests, it seems like school is there to prove how dumb they are. And consistently getting tests and being told that they're not getting it. And so eventually they lose interest.
I love teachers. Yeah, but a lot of them, they're not cut from the same cloth as you are, as our teacher was when we was growing up. You know, the teachers just was so awesome back, you know, in the 70s and 80s and 60s. They wanted so much for the kids, and they wanted to see you evolve and grow. And now these teachers are so young. And when I go to school, I can't tell them from the students. And it just doesn't seem like their heart is into it. Most of them are there specifically for a check. I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate thing that's happened in particularly public schools. But I don't want to deride off public schools. There's a number of great public schools. There's a number of great principals and administrators and teachers. So there's plenty of fabulous mm-hmm. teachers teaching in public schools. So I don't want to label public school in a negative light across the board. I would go so far as to say there's more great ones than there are awful ones. But it's an issue of parents understanding the difference. And so that's why I like to work with parents and put the onus on parents, so that parents know value coming from their school from something that's invaluable in a public school setting. I'm not. I don't push I don't push parents to put their kids in private schools. You can get the same thing out of any damn what's needed and what's required for their kids to excel. And I try to teach parents they don't have to create an adversarial relationship with the school or the teacher. They just, if they're informed and the parents are consistent. One of the worst things that a parent can do is just to go up to a teacher, and I advise teachers to parents, schedule time to periodically visit the teacher and get your calendar out and say, these are the dates I'd like to visit you. Now, the worst thing that you could do is on the first day you're supposed to visit, you don't show up and don't call. Now the teacher labels you as you know, you didn't mean it, and
that's right.
And they won't take you serious. But if you can't make it, you call and let them know.
That's
now
right.
I won't be able to make it. And you have a friend in that teacher when you show up and show interest in not just your student, but interest in the
that's
other
right.
students, and you're asking the teacher, in what way can I help? You know, you may be a volunteer at the school. If it's a high school, you may be a volunteer. If you're a father, go out to the track coach and help them put up the things for the track meet or anything like that.
That's
and
right.
in time, your kids begin to appreciate in the school and the teachers at the school begin to appreciate and start to do the kinds
exactly.
of things with your student.
And
those are the
they
kinds
will
of things
appreciate
that
the child more.
Absolutely. And those are the kinds of things that are commonplace in some private schools. The privileged private schools, that's commonplace. That's, you know, all the parents are like that. Well, not all of them, but it's very common. So, and that's why I say you can create that kind of culture in any school, but it takes the parents. I don't put the onus on the teachers because you're right. A lot of teachers, they're young and they're in it. You know, it's a job. You know, it's a job and they're in it for the money. They have their heart, but they, you know, sometimes they get disillusioned and then they get jaded. But so it's up to the parents to create the kind of environment at the school.
That's true. And what I want to say is a lot of these teachers, again, are very young and they are very small. And a lot of these kids are very big, you know. And I'm being honest, and I have heard them say, like, the generation of kids are not kids. These are not kids that a lot of these teachers are dealing with. So they have to, I don't know, I think their mind conforms in just trying to make it, adapt, and just make it in that environment.
Well,
I see a lot of violence in school these days with the students against teachers, and I feel bad because that was an institution for learning. And I just don't know where we are as a country that can do something about this. I feel like when they took the Pledge of Allegiance and the prayer out of school, a lot of our kids kind of fell back, you know, because a lot of them, school is the only place they were being taught respect, not only for themselves but for their country. So I just think each state should take responsibility of the kids also and make sure that they have everything they need to grow. I really do believe that.
Well, and you're alluding on something very important. Teachers have to be skilled in how to deal with different kinds of situations with students. They have to be able to read situations. And so sometimes students will act and behave in a certain way because something's going on in their community, something's going on at home, something's going on with their friends, out on the playground. And teachers have to be astute and skilled enough to recognize that and know how to deal with that. Just like that little five-year-old I was talking about that's excited about school. Well, that maintains in us. It's there. It's in all of the students. And so the skilled teachers are able to find it and bring it out. Sometimes a student, if you give them some responsibility, you know, that'll turn them around, their behavior turns around. Other students, they don't want responsibility, and that'll keep them straight. You know, so it's more than just teaching. It's a psychologist also that a teacher has to know how to spot different kinds of issues with different kids, and to know how to deal with those things and not take it personal. Don't get in the mix where you become a problem
as well. Almost like an officer. Yeah. Almost like an officer, if you really think about it. They have to be teachers and counselors and social workers and protectors and, you know, guidance. It's just so much.
Because students want to know that you care about them. They want to know that you care about them.
That's true. That's true.
So
and that's even in the home, you know.
Absolutely.
They want to know. They want you to.
Yeah, absolutely. And it all, for me, evolves back into what's going on at home. You know, you were mentioning prayer in school and things like that. Well, it's okay if prayer's not in school, if prayer's at home. If it's done effectively at home, then the kids take it with them. They don't have to say it in front of the whole class, but they have it inside of them. And so, again,
that's
starts at home.
And that's why I said a lot of them, they don't see that at home. Like, that's the only place a lot of them get to eat a meal, and you know, just to even acknowledge God and acknowledge the state and people around them, learn respect, because a lot of these kids are just traumatized by their home life. I want to ask you, where do you see this program going in the future, in the very near future?
Well, I'm having a lot of opportunity to spread out. I've done some things with the College Board, and they have their Dream Deferred Conference around the country. So I've done workshops for them around the country, in Philadelphia, New York, and other, you know, Northern California. So in addition, I am writing, I'm just about to publish a book called Admired Man Why, The Making of an Admired Man. And it's based on some research that I've done over the last few years on the characteristics, behaviors, and qualities of men that are admired. And so in this book, I tell stories that people have told me around the country, and from those stories, the skills that are required to have the quality, characteristics, and behaviors of an admired man. And I share specifically the kinds of things that we can teach our young men, that we can model ourselves as older men, the characteristics of being admired. And I think in this way, not only do we transform our families, but we transform our communities. You know, but it is time. What I'm finding is a lot of the deficits, mothers are trying hard and have been so in all communities, but in some ways, men have not stepped up for the challenge that they really need to have a more positive influence on their families and in their communities. And so that's one of the things that the organization will be the organization and myself will really be promoting the book, and I'll have workshops and a workbook so that mothers and fathers can learn the kinds of things that can teach their young sons and daughters about the qualities and characteristics for being admired, and also model themselves. I say in the book quite a bit that you can say anything you want to a kid, but they're going to do what they see. So if you tell them certain things,
and
if they don't see that in you, they're not going to do it. And so it's really designed for not only us mentoring young, but also modeling it for young people. So that's an area that we're going to be spending a lot of concentration on, making of admired men around the country.
I think what you're doing is just so awesome. I'm trying to just put in my mind what made you do something so extraordinary. You know, was it something in your childhood that you felt like you lacked in?
Well, yeah, I mean, as I grew up and I saw the tremendous difference in what my kids were getting and what I got, I was inspired to share that. I enjoyed so much. And I enjoyed my own growing up. I enjoyed it. I didn't know that there was any deficits until later. So I did enjoy it, and I still value my own upbringing. But there was such a profound difference in opportunities that I saw kids on the other side of town getting, including my own kids, that I knew that the kids in the community that I grew up with were just as capable, just as talented, and just as desiring and just as deserving for the same kind of opportunity. And so once my kids went on to college, I was inspired to share what I had learned in my lifetime and share things that I knew with others and to continue to learn. And so it's just, you know, this is what I was put here to do. I just accepted it like that. It's what I was put here to do. It wasn't enough for me.
I hear, out of all everything you said, I hear that you love your children so much that, and you love people so much that the love for your children inspired you to share what your children was getting or are getting with other people's children that's not. And that right there is selfless. That's a selfless act, and I know God is smiling upon you right now. I know you made Jesus smile, so I don't know what would Jesus do, but I bet he's smiling right now. You're doing something great, and I can't wait for it to expand around the world. And I really do believe with the right people and you know, God bringing you full circle, I really do believe in my heart that this is going to be around America within the next 2 years. Only thing we have to do is start the fire. And I think you've already started it. And we just need that fire to spread and just be contagious and just have, you know, affect everybody's heart, because it's hard to get people to even care about themselves, but to care about someone else's seed or someone else's child in their brain. That's beautiful to me. It's beautiful to me, and it's something more people should do that have more power than you. You know, it's stuff people can do and help people to congregate for the kids. And I really hope that more people will reach out to you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. You're in the Atlanta area, right?
Yes, sir. And anything I can do for you here, I would love to. I would love to be a part of what you're building, what you're growing. And not for me. It's really for these kids that's lost. If we give them a different direction to go in, they wouldn't be out there gangbanging, because they'll know that people love them. And they won't be in the street trying to find love, because that's all they're trying to find is themselves and love. And the street is not anywhere to find that at. You're not going to find it there.
You're absolutely right. And that's what my campaign is for the Admired Man, is that it's to give particularly these boys a feeling of appreciation for men and involvement from men, because many of these boys that I've had opportunity to talk with, they did not have fathers in their lives, and they're looking for something. They're looking for some validation of being some significant, and they get it from other gang members.
Yes.
And so if they had fathers in their lives that did things with them and that showed them and validated their purpose, a lot of them would not be engaged in that. And that's why my campaign, aside from just the education, that's there, but one of the things that, you know, statistics shows that boys and girls that have fathers in their lives do far better in academic than those that don't.
Exactly.
That's why my campaign for the Admired Men, I formed an organization called the Admired Men Leadership Institute, and we're going to do work with men and boys and women. Because as well, I talk about young girls that don't have fathers in their lives. They look for men that are like the fathers they don't have in their lives. And then their children don't have fathers in their lives. And so it perpetuates. So we have a lot of work to do, but you're right. I think it's the love for my mother and the love for my children, the love for my family that just gives me the strength to do this work. I feel like that this is what I'm here for, and I feel, I'm glad you said God is smiling on me, because I feel my mother, who's, I say, sit next to Jesus every day, and I know she points at me and tells Jesus, there's my son right there, Jesus, and she smiles. So I feel that every day.
A mother's love transcends space and time. She's always going to have you in her heart, even if she's in spirit. I think your mom and Jesus is smiling right now, and I think she's up there bragging to all the angels.
Oh, yeah, they're listening in on the show.
Look at my boy. That's
well,
awesome.
I want to thank you also. I want to thank you also for, you know, having the fortitude and the insight to have a show like
yes.
this. I know that it's hard work, and to bring the message, my message and others' message, to others, you know, because we all play a part in this, and without you having the work that you do, you know, we're in a silo and it's quiet. So I want to commend you and give
you
praise and appreciation for the work that you do, because I recognize how important it is.
Yes, sir, it is. And you know what? We're about to conclude the show, but because of last week, and I apologize to you then, I'm going to apologize to you now, I really apologize. It was not my fault. It was Blog Talk Radio. They had scheduled you back for this day, but, you know, I just want to extend another interview to you, and maybe it would be great if you could bring, you know, one of your older, like, students or someone that you've helped, just so the world can hear what, you know, you do, what you mean to someone else. I would love to, you know, interview you again or interview you with whoever you want to bring on the show, because you're doing something impeccable, and I think it should be heard. I really do feel like it should be heard.
Well, thank you very much. I will most certainly take you up on that. In fact, I'd love to talk about the work on the Mind Man.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, because that, again, like I said, I really want to get that message out as well, because I think that
we can do an earlier time also where the kids went right when my schedule is not so hectic, because I'm in a production and we're about to be on stage tomorrow, so everything is hectic right now, but I would love to do a show about that and about your book. Could you please tell them before we leave right quick where they can find more of your information?
You can find my information at, first of all, you can find me on Facebook at Each One Teach One Alliance for Academic Access. You can also find my, and E1T1.org. on the internet, E1T1.org.
Awesome. All right, guys, we're about to conclude the show. This has been Dr. Chris Hickey and his marvelous program, Each One Teach One. So right now, go and spread the love, Each One Teach One. And